Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Joining us, we're here to talk about Final Destination. It came out in not to be confused with The Final Destination, which is part four, but it's the first one. They released in the year 2000.
A good year for me. I graduated from high school.
Oh, I was
a junior. Yeah,
I was a junior.
But which is exactly why we picked this theme, because we get all nostalgic for our teen years.
Yeah, that's it.
Hey, I would totally go back to high school.
I go back to college.
Really?
High school is rough.
Oh, I loved high school. I had such good friends. I had a car. I had no job. I had no responsibilities. My school was a joke. It was so much fun.
I had the exact opposite experience.
I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
It was a garbage place.
I'm
full
sorry
of garbage people. Except for my best friend, Liz.
Yeah,
she was there, but she'd probably agree it was garbage too.
Yeah, well, at least you found one other person.
True, I guess so.
But before we can, go on that merry trip down memory lane, what's new with you, Meredith?
Let's see. I've been playing a lot of video games.
What?
I know, it's surprising. I've been listening obsessively to this podcast and cleaning my house because my house is a shambles.
I was noticing it looked tidier, and now you have bar stools at your island.
We're just moving on up in the world, Katie.
Clearly. Now there's seating in the kitchen.
I dusted. I threw trash away.
That's the sound of me falling out of my chair.
I know. I've been doing all this stuff that I hate, like domestic work.
Oh, yeah. I hate windows.
Yeah.
That's the least rewarding chore.
Boring. So, but it's called Scare You to Sleep, and they have, it's really good, and for the most part, it's, like, stories written by people, like, fictional ghost stories and stuff, which is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But the part that I've gotten addicted to was Reddit, like, recounts of, like, Reddit, stuff on Reddit that's mm-hmm. weird and creepy and whatever, like, legendary for being nuts.
Yeah.
Reddit posts from the, past several years, and she reads those stories and like responses on Reddit, and it's called Dark Reddit, her episode. So I'm like, I've listened to every single one on the catalog. I'm like, ooh, like I went to my classroom and started doing stuff, and I was like, I listened to like four or five episodes, just like creeping myself out.
I know, that's the best, be like alone in an empty school building,
it's
empty
all
classroom.
Dark. Yeah. It's dark everywhere, and you're like by yourself, and you're like, oh, this is fine. But yeah, it was pretty juicy.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff.
And that podcast is where you got the recommendation for a movie we saw.
Yeah.
Oh, we don't want to talk about that?
I think I've decided I don't dislike it as much as I thought I did.
Oh my God, because the moment the credits rolled, you went, well, I hated that.
I was like, ugh. I think, okay.
We saw Long Legs last week.
We'll talk about it. So, I think it's just, I felt like Nick Cage's performance was over the top, bordering on like satirical, being like, mm-hmm. Too much.
Okay.
And that's kind of him, though.
Yeah.
But I think if I went into it with a different kind of, attitude. I do have to say the cinematography, the scene, like it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other parts I really appreciated a lot. Mm-hmm. I thought were really good. It's just,
did you think it was mostly Nicolas Cage that threw it off for you, or was it because I know that you told me that the word on the street was that it was being compared to Silence of the Lambs, which clearly the only similarity is that it is about a young female FBI agent
in the 90s.
Yeah, that's it. Yes. Like there's no other element of the movies that is similar at all.
Yeah.
And but even though you had told me that, like, I don't think I went into it with any particular expectation based on that. And I thought it was terrifying. Like, I would agree that once, like, you know, you always figure out the whole story before I do. And I know that affects your enjoyment of movies. But even and like
that's not a brag.
No,
it's like a huge frustration. I wish I wasn't.
Yeah, it's a lamentation.
It's annoying. I hate it.
And so like the last third of the movie, when they start putting those pieces together and they start explaining things to those of us that haven't already figured it out on our own.
And I was like,
then it did start to get a little bit like, okay. But the first like two thirds of the movie, I really spent the whole time thinking you must be loving it because it was so tense. Like, it wasn't jump scares, it wasn't cliche, it wasn't cheesy. It was suspenseful and tense. And, like, especially, you know, the scenes of her in her house.
Yeah.
Like,
that's the part I really much enjoyed because the setting, the scenery, her, everything was very well. It was very well done. So I would agree with that part.
And so I felt like for that, the majority of the movie, I was really on edge. I was really frightened. And, you know, there were a couple of jump scares that definitely got me, not you. But then even at the end,
Katie,
when
I'm dead inside, don't you know?
Yeah, she has no reactions to anything. But I actually really enjoyed it quite a lot.
I think that I would say I liked the first three quarters and then it unraveled for me, probably. But if we rewatched it with like a different perspective, and I don't want to do spoilers because we're not spoiling this movie in particular. Yeah, but,
and it's so new.
Yeah.
I think people should go see it.
I think probably people would either really like it or be like, eh.
Yeah.
You know, but it was definitely an experience. And so I think that I had to think about it. But my first knee jerk reaction was like, ugh, when I left. And Katie was there to witness me and be like, blah, like all disgruntled, trudging back to my car.
All mad. I went and saw that at 9:45 a.m. And I was
like, I got out of bed for this in the summer for this.
Yeah.
But. Anyway.
No, but I would recommend, and I have already recommended it to a couple of people, and I think that it's good, too, to support these kind of more original fringe scary movies.
Yeah.
Because we know the cash grabs are going to keep getting made no matter what, just because they're, you know, everybody goes to see Final Destination 5. But things like this, where you don't really have a touchstone or a real hook, and maybe that's why they were throwing around things like Silence of the Lambs, because they were really trying to drum up, you know, their viewership, because it wasn't like this big budget Hollywood thing. It was a little fringe.
Yeah. It kind of, parts of it remind me of like House of the Devil. Because there was the Satanism.
Yeah.
There's devil worship. Then also parts of it reminded me of Mindhunter, like the show.
Yeah.
Where they like just profiling and crime scenes. And
because
all
even though
stuff.
Like you said it was set in the 90s, but it felt even older than that. Like, it felt like it could have been the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, with House of the Devil, like, visually, I think there were a lot of similarities with the cinematography. And I know, they're both very cool movies, so.
Yeah, I think it was fun, but I had to reflect on it and get less mad.
Yeah.
About me being, like, sad, disappointed, I guess. And then maybe I won't be if I rewatch it with a different kind of mindset.
But, yeah.
Like, I was having a conversation in my guild Discord, actually, about my visceral, annoyed reaction to The Witch.
Yes, which I shared.
Yeah. I was like, this was like nothing happened, but a lot of weird stuff happened. But I was like, whatever.
I mean, just a little bit. And that's the thing is, The Witch wasn't scary.
No, but I think it was marketed in a way that was not true.
Because
everyone's like, it'll be the most terrifying movie you'll ever see.
We should never believe it when they say that.
That's Sinister.
Yes.
That's the movie Sinister.
Gets that credit.
Where I just left having like a stomach ache because I was so anxious and like.
I'm like, I just want to sit down and cry right now for like 10 minutes. And,
but that was not The Witch. And I feel like if I rewatch that movie with a different perspective or kind of attitude, like, oh, it's like kind of a dark historical fiction movie.
No, see, and I've rewatching The Witch. It just gets more boring.
Oh.
Because when we watched it the first time, we spent the whole time waiting for stuff to start happening. Like, I know. Waiting, like, any minute now, stuff's going to start happening. And nothing ever started happening.
The thing is, though, I'm also someone who really enjoys a slow burn movie. And yeah. probably more than most.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's fair.
And even still, I left pretty dissatisfied. So our one of our previous co-hosts who mm-hmm. came and joined us remotely, Luke, mm-hmm. He really enjoys this movie. And we always kind of go back and forth, like, jokingly about yeah. how he thinks I'm a bozo, and we're not. And I'm like,
I just like how, like, every couple of episodes we make sure to shit all over either The Witch or Midsommar. We're like, just to remind you folks that we hated these movies.
I did rewatch Midsommar, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Not too long ago, and definitely enjoyed it more. Mm-hmm. I think, but yeah. Anyway, this conversation's going off the rails. But this is a horror movie podcast, and we're talking about scary movies. So,
yeah, and if you don't like it. I don't know what to tell you.
Contact our advertisers, which is me. I pay for this, so whatever.
Yep, she sure does. I don't pay her anything.
Let's throw Katie under the bus.
Yep, that's me. I just show up.
So is that your what's new with you, long legs or something?
Oh no. I mean, yeah, that's one of the few new things that's been going on with me. I did also take on a big project at my school last week. We have a storage book closet upstairs that has been it's just like you could go into it with kind of like a paleontological approach of like, you know, this strata is from the 90s and below that you'll find books from the 80s and below that you'll find books published in the 60s. And our school is not great at getting rid of stuff.
Because you might need it one right. day. Why? Who can say?
And so, but there have been a couple of things like since I've been there where I'm like, you know what? No, fuck this. Like the set of dictionaries that was in my classroom when I got it. Like I remember one of my students at the end of the year, 2 years ago, she like brought it to me and she goes, there's a list of presidents in the front and it stops at Johnson. And we also, that was like the same week we realized, because they were looking up these vocabulary words from a text we were reading and they were like, activism isn't in here. And I'm like, okay, you guys just aren't, because, you know, using a dictionary is a skill that kids don't do a lot anymore and it takes practice. And so usually they're like, it's not in here. And I walk over and I point to it in 11 seconds. And they were right. The word activism was not in that dictionary because
it's
it was
not recognized.
Well, that's the thing. It was a student dictionary. The cover said it was like Merriam-Webster student dictionary for boys and girls, which is why we definitely don't want the word
maybe girls if they want to get it out at secretarial school.
Yeah. Get out of the kitchen and look up some words.
Between their typing and smoking.
Yeah. But anyway, so my project that I had promised myself I would do this summer was load everything out of this book closet, which was enormous.
Have you been listening to scary stuff while you do it?
No, I did. I just had music. Well, because I was going back and forth between rooms and it was, you know, it was a pretty physically taxing job too. I had some help like toting and carrying and stuff. But anyway, and the good news, because we have to get administrative approval to actually dispose of any textbooks. We can't just do it willy-nilly.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Which I can understand to some extent. But so I spent one day unloading and organizing I took it all out of the book closet and spread it out on the desks in my classroom and sorted it by subject and grade level and all of that. And then on another day, our vice principal came in and worked with me and actually approved getting rid of like over half of the materials.
That's good.
Which is incredible because like the storage closet was not a usable space. Like all the teachers keep their stuff in their classroom because that was like overflowing with stuff nobody used. Yeah. And now it's going to be like shelves that they can actually keep stuff on. So I'm feeling pretty good about that.
That's nice. It's like when you feel like you've accomplished something. And then later be like, look, you don't have to store all your stuff because we actually have a space because you're not storing all this garbage.
Yeah.
Basically, for no reason.
Yeah. So that was very satisfying. And organizing things is like something I really, really enjoy and I'm very, very good at. And so like at my house, it's like it can't be further organized because it's my house. It's already organized to the maximum nth degree. And so I need to find other spaces in my life outside of my home that can benefit from that because I really do enjoy it. What's that?
Come to my classroom and organize my student library, which is all a shambles. Because I moved in last year and mm-hmm. I was like, I'll organize it one day.
Eventually. Nope.
Still have it. I just keep dusting here. I'm like, that's so much dust.
No, my one of my best friends, Kelly, actually one of my high school best friends, I remember at one time in high school, like her room was so bad that her dad offered to pay me to come over and help her clean out and organize her room. Like we found it was literally like a sandwich in a lunchbox from fourth grade.
Oh, my God.
It was disgusting. Same friend. Fast forward to this year, 2024. So like it's 25 years later.
It's who that you are.
And she invited me over to help her reorganize her kitchen just a couple weeks ago. So, yeah.
Yeah, I see like Deke's room and it looks like a garbage pit. And I'm like, that was me.
Yeah.
I've improved a lot, actually.
I was like that as a kid. But by the time I was in high school, I was like I am now.
I can't. I just can't. I'm too like, meh. Yeah. I'm like, piles of papers, it's fine.
You're like, there's more fun stuff to do.
I know. I'll do literally anything else.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll go vacuum everything before I'll organize a stack of papers. That requires like thinking, and vacuuming is mindless.
That's so true.
I whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. So that was not at all related to horror movies. So a tangent that was maybe less of a valuable use of our time, but let's jump into the movie.
No, but you were talking about what you did and, you know, it was like cleaning up your crap at your school. So way to go.
Getting that warm, fuzzy feeling that wasn't just sticking my hand into a pile of dead silverfish.
Oh, God. Gross. Okay, I did the recap this time. So I don't think... It's like 3.5 pages. It's kind of a short movie, but not.
Well, yeah, I think it would depend on how much detail you went into all the deaths.
I didn't. There's only so much you can do where you see
splat
stuff it's just go into places
splat,
and
splat,
knock something
smash.
Over and then it mists something else.
It's all it's all Rube like, Goldberg Project death.
Yeah. It's so anyway. It all seems just like a science project where things are knocking each other.
Yeah,
that,
yeah, that's what exactly. A Rube Goldberg Project is. Yeah. Yes.
So. Okay, so the movie opens with some parents helping a young Alex, played by Devon Sawa, pack for his senior trip. Alex tries to keep an old tag on a bag that he borrowed from his dad, and he wants to keep it on for good luck, but his mom just laughs, and she's like, ha, whatever, and tears it off, and apparently that's ominous.
Mm-hmm. And he gets a look on his face that shows you how truly ominous
Alex
it is.
Alex is like, oh, boy. And then when I watched this, actually, quick like tangent, when I watched it in 2000 in the theater, I didn't realize that that's really stupid to keep an old tag on your bag. Like, why would you do that? Because they need that for like...
Yeah, it's just going to confuse like, them when they're actually like, you know,
loading
processing
the bags
your stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you have to like connecting flights and whatever. That yeah. Anyway, so he's
stupid. And then another small tangent. Just, I know I've said this when we said we were doing this movie previously, but Devon Sawa... I love him. I spent so much of my childhood loving him. In that movie, Now and Then. Do you remember that one that Christina Ricci did?
I think I've seen
Thor
it once.
Birch, and then like the adult cast was like Demi Moore and Melanie Griffith and
Does it have Rosie O'Donnell?
Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell, and then the other one is Rita Wilson, Tom Hanks's wife. Anyway, it was a great '90s movie, and Devon Sawa was in that one as a little cutie pie, and then he played, you know, for like 20 seconds he was Casper as a real boy at the end of the Casper movie with Christina Ricci. And then, you know, he did okay, I think, as a teen and young adult performer, but then we didn't see him for a really long time until he came back in that Chucky miniseries.
Yeah, he's doing work now again.
Yeah, he's still not a bad looking guy.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't actually have the Devon Sawa experience either.
No, I'm not surprised by that. Like, cute little blondes, I don't imagine were your lane.
I liked dark, ominous, weird adults. Like Marilyn Manson and Trent Reznor. And
yeah.
I'm like, I like people who are very conflicted and dark.
The tormented.
I want the tormented people who probably would treat me like garbage.
Yeah.
If I was an adult, like dating them.
But I'm sure it'd be okay because I'm sure I'd deserve it.
Yeah, I deserve it. Anyway, so mom laughs, tears the tag off the luggage. His dad comments that he's off on a senior trip to Paris. He should enjoy this because he has his whole life ahead of him. And Devon's always like, every
another
single
ominous
time,
face.
He's like,
oh, yeah. This whole movie is just him making that face.
He's just going, oh boy, I don't know about that, dad. Like everything. So Alex has a bit of a weird feeling, but he goes to bed that night. And the following day, they go on their trip to the airport on the bus, and there's the class, the senior class, with along with some teachers. Hare Krishna gives Alex a "death is not the end" comment, and then a flyer at the airport, and then one of the teachers, I forget her name, I have it down here later in my notes, but she's like, "The death's gonna be, it's gonna be the end for you if you don't quit fucking with my students."
Yeah, and she like flipped him off. Yeah.
She shoots in the bird. So already I like her. Mm-hmm. So then Alex checks into his flight, and the airline worker tells him the departure time is the same day as his birthday. And now the senior class, they're waiting for the flight in the terminal. Another girl, Claire, drops her travel guide for France, and it opens up to the page about Princess Diana and shows like the remains of that horrible accident in the tunnel that happened. I think it was 97 that happened.
Yeah.
So then later, Alex and his friend Todd, they're trying to go poop. Because Todd's like, we can't go poop on the plane because that would be so embarrassing for the girls we like to encounter that situation. And they're playing John Denver on the like the music playing, and Alex is not really thrilled about that.
He makes the face again.
He goes, ugh. And so now the class, they're boarding their flight. The students are looking for their seats, and Alex sits and buckles up. He just seems like an anxious flyer.
Yeah.
He doesn't really seem excited about the flying prospect. He seems to, he's leery of the plane, and some girls come and ask him to switch seats with him. And Alex goes and sits with Todd. And Todd is very like, don't switch seats, because he wanted to sit next to the cute
hot girl, yeah.
So, and then he notices the tray goes and falls open, and the latch screw kind of like comes out. Mm-hmm. And he's like, huh, weird. Then the plane starts taxiing, and Alex is pretty nervous. The plane lifts off, and everyone cheers because they're excited to be off on their senior trip. The plane starts shuddering. There's some turbulence, but it quiets, and then everyone is relieved, but it's brief relief. Suddenly, the plane is not okay. Everyone's screaming. The oxygen masks drop. There is a fire, explosion. People are pulled out of the plane, and it explodes. And Alex witnesses this, and suddenly, the plane is engulfed in flames. And then suddenly, Alex is awakened by the two girls asking him if they would switch seats with him.
You're like, oh, thank God. It was all a dream.
It was all a dream. So he goes, he's like, what? And he doesn't say anything to them. He goes over next to Todd, and the seat tray falls open, and the screw thing comes out, just like in his dream. Alex shouts that the plane's going to explode, and some students get involved, telling him to shut the fuck up, basically. Yeah. Like, shut up. We're trying to go, and you're ruining this. Some teachers and Claire, they get off the plane because they're trying to restrain him, the flight attendant. So,
you can't
just shout this plane's going to explode.
Even pre-9/11, you don't get to just yell that on a plane.
Yeah, so that's important, too. This is pre-9/11. That tragedy has not happened yet.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure they would not have made this movie at all, or certainly not this way, if it had been afterward.
It probably would have been a long while before this, if this is already in production. So the teachers beg, they're like, please, they're like, no one's going back on that plane. And the teachers are like, oh, okay, so we have a whole senior class with someone. One of us has to go. So the teachers beg, and at least one of them is able to go back, the man. I can't remember his name, actually, but the teacher who remains behind, Miss Luton, tells the other teacher, she's like, go back on the plane. You
speak French.
You're the whole French thing, and I'll come back. I'll be there in 9 hours, like whenever the next flight's out. The remaining students are really mad, and they're fighting, and they're being pulled apart again in the terminal because Alex and Carter just can't quit. Being talking shit to each other, and everyone's there they go. Billy's like, oh, there they go without us, and suddenly he goes, oh shit, and then suddenly the plane explodes, exploding all of the windows in the terminal, or wherever they're, I don't know if they're in the terminal,
they're at the gates,
and suddenly everyone's looking at Alex like he's kind of the devil. They're like, how did you know? And Miss Layton's like, were there any survivors? He's like, I don't actually know.
Yeah. So there were 7 of them, right? Because Alex is the main character, this Devon Sawa. And then you said Carter. He's like the jock guy that was played by Kerr Smith from Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, I have actually, I wrote down who they were, but I don't remember. I didn't write down like who played them.
Oh, okay.
We know that Billy is played. Who was he? Also Sean played William Stifler. Scott.
Yeah.
From American Pie. So the other students who got off the plane are Carter. I actually never watched Dawson's Creek, so that's where he's from. I've never seen that show.
I own the entire series on DVD.
I never watched that show. And his girlfriend, Terry. Mm-hmm. Billy, who's kind of a goofball, and they kind of give him shit all the time, and you make fun of him. And then there's Alex's best friend, Todd. Mm-hmm. And then Ms. Luton, was like... forced to get off the plane. She was the teacher who remained behind. And then Clear, who just walked off the plane.
And that's Allie Larder, who was a... I think at that point she was pretty big, too, because she'd already made, like, Varsity Blues and got a lot of attention for that whipped cream bikini, so...
Oh, was she in that?
Yeah.
Oh.
The movie, not the TV show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then... What else? She's done a lot since then.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
She was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Yes, yes. So then the group is waiting in a room, and law enforcement arrive, and they want to speak to the survivors, and they question Alex about, and they ask him, like, how do you know about the plane exploding? And he simply says he saw it explode in a vision, and then he had, like, a really bad feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And then, so it seems like everyone has, like, major survivor's guilt. Clear is asked in questioning, like, why did you get off the plane? You know, you didn't know Alex. You were not involved in the fight. You weren't cleared off the plane. You just got off on your own volition. And she's like, because I saw and I heard Alex and I believed him. Mm-hmm. So she got off because she had a bad feeling based off of Alex. And she never even, like, spoken to him. She didn't know him at all.
Right.
So the parents of the surviving students arrive. Everyone goes home. Clear's dropped off because she pretty much just takes care of herself.
Yeah, I just love that, like, all the other kids get picked up by their parents, and she's just like, somebody give me a ride home, please.
Hey! But, you know, she may not be so bad off if she's able to go on a senior trip to Paris. I mean, they probably just, like, they're like, oh, you're here, here's some money, go take care of yourself. So Alex goes home, he's distraught, he watches the news, and he sees that there are no survivors. Later at the memorial for the students, everyone is in attendance. As they're walking up to put roses on the plaque, Carter starts shit with Alex, saying, you know, just because my name isn't on that plaque doesn't mean I owe you anything. Then they're all weirded out by Alex. Miss Luton is like, stay away from me. You scare the hell out of me to Alex, because he's like, Miss Luton. And she's like, get the fuck out of here. So then Todd and Alex are also make plans to reconnect. Briefly, they chat because his dad is very leery of Alex.
Yeah.
And his twin brother.
Yeah. Todd's. I don't know if they were twins or just in the same grade. But
They're in this. His brother was also on the plane.
Yeah. And so his brother died.
Yeah. His brother died. So Todd is feeling kind of major survivor's guilt because his brother has just died. And he's like, well, we'll maybe go do a game once my dad gets over this, basically. So then later that night, Alex is researching what happened on the plane. Or with the plane. It's his kind of obsession now. And he has, like, books and maps and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Graphs and diagrams.
Seating charts.
And then Todd is at his house getting ready for bed. He's grooming himself, like, nose trimmer or whatever. Then there's a toilet leak. And then he slips and strangles himself on a clothesline in the bathroom. Alex gets a warning. He threw a penthouse magazine into the fan. Mm-hmm. And the fan shredded it. And then there's a piece of the magazine that just says Todd, and it lands in his lap. And then it puts Alex on alert, and he goes to Todd's house and discovers that the coroner van is there and that Todd has died. And his dad is basically like, this is all your fault.
Yeah.
And Alex is like, I don't
know what you're talking about. But at the same time, it's like, why are you here?
Yeah. And then Claire happens to be there. She's like behind a tree. She's like, get the hell out of here. And like pops back behind the tree. Then the next day, Alex goes to Clear's house. She tells him that Alex is being scrutinized because of the suspicious nature of the plane explosion and him having a vision. Then he turns up at Todd's house. So the feds are like, this guy, there's something wrong with this kid.
Yeah, something's going on here.
Yeah, something's going on. So, and then the two of them now have a connection. Clear and Alex want to know more, and they decide to go break into the funeral home to go see Todd. Where they run into the funeral home director, who is actually Tony Todd, who we love, who plays the Candyman. He tells Alex that he figured out Death's design, and then he walked off the plane. And now there's a new design for them, but also don't disrespect death. They just kind of have to figure out the new design and kind of avoid it. Mm-hmm. And then he tells Alex, I'll see you soon. Yeah. So he's cool. And then Alex and Claire are like, we have to figure out what the design is. We have to look at the omens and be open to it. Claire kind of isn't buying it. She's like, I think you're full of crap.
Yeah.
And so this is actually, I think, the next day or something. They're getting coffee or something, trying to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And Alex tells her she just has to be open. Carter shows up, and then he's in his car with his girlfriend Terry, and they're playing Nine Inch Nails, and and he's like kind of hissing basically at Alex and Clear. And he almost hits Billy, who's on his bicycle, you know, riding around, and he gets knocked off. Terry's not thrilled. She's like, you got to get over this. Quit bullying people and giving people shit all the time.
She's like one of those girls where it's like, okay, then why is this your boyfriend? Like, if you know he's an asshole and a dick and won't stop doing this shitty stuff to other people, why are you still with him? Like, why are you dating him?
Because he's cute.
I never thought Kerr Smith was cute, but I guess that I understand why they keep casting him as that character.
Yeah. So the Miss Luton happens to be there too. And then Terry has finally, she's had enough. She yells at them. She's like, we lived and they died. Get over it. You know, if you can't get over it, you know, you might as well just drop dead. And then she gets hit by a bus.
Like a big splat.
Yeah, in front of everyone. And they're like, ah. And then Alex is, of course, at another scene of a death that happens. So later that night, Alex figures out, you know, how they are dying and in what order and what who's going to be next.
Right.
Basically. And it all has to do with them where they were sitting, and the plane is on the plane, and that's determining who will die next after Terry has died. So Alex does, she goes to Miss Luton's house, and then she calls the feds to come pick him up, because he's like looking at her tires, he's like weirded, you know, he's like worried about her.
Yeah.
You know, and she thinks he's a creep. So Luton's home, she's playing John Denver for some reason.
Yeah.
Everyone just loves John Denver in this town. So then she dies when, and she's like actually packing up to leave, because she's like, I can't handle this.
She's moving away, yeah.
I can't deal with this guilt. I keep seeing the students that I'm assuming she was close to dying in front of her, or like that died. Mm-hmm. So then a large knife kills her, and then her house explodes.
Well, yeah, because it's like, this is a perfect example of that whole Rube Goldberg like approach to it, because it's like she pours herself vodka in a coffee mug, first of all, who's drinking vodka out of a coffee mug, and it has a crack in the bottom, but she doesn't realize it. So she walks across the whole house, dripping a trail of vodka along the floor, and then she leans over her computer and it drips a little bit of vodka onto the back, because it's one of those like giant desktop computers. And so the vodka drips into the back of it and causes a spark, and then there's the smoke going, and like all of the crazy shit that like this happens to this, and then she's responding to that, and then this fire starts, and then she's in the kitchen, and then eventually she is laying on the floor, like flat on her back on the kitchen floor. She can't get up. She's reaching for a towel, pulling the towel down. She pulls the knife block down, and the entire block of knives lands on her, impaling her over and over and over again. And so it's just like this whole, this causes this, causes this, causes this to like lead to their death. And so you just watch this whole little, scenario be built
and
leading
up
to it.
And the music is like, and it's like drip, drip, drip.
Yep.
Stab, stab, stab. anyway, yeah, that was my quick and dirty. Knives killer and the house explodes.
But before it explodes.
Yeah, all that stuff happens.
No, but I mean, Alex runs inside to try to save her.
Yeah, and he sees all this crazy. He looks very guilty.
Yeah.
And hits culpability. Like, he looks culpable of this death.
Well, because like something like a chair falls and like drives the knife further into her. But that's after, because it's first when he runs in and he sees her, he like grabs the hilt of the knife. It's like, then, way to go, smart guy. Put your fingerprints on the murder weapon.
And he's like, ah! And he's like holding it up, looking like he's caught red handed.
Yeah.
Billy's also riding by on his bike. He always shows up places on his bicycle and then dumbass. He gets like knocked off. And then Alex, he runs off. So then Clear Carter and Billy, they want to go looking for him because they're like, Claire's like, we're all involved in this. We got to go find Alex.
Yeah, we're the only ones left now.
Yeah, and find him. They go and find him pretty quickly. Claire tells Alex about her dad who was killed. He went out to get some cigarettes and got killed by, I guess, a robber or something at a convenience store. Alex, finally, he goes with Carter. And then Claire and Billy are in Carter's car. And Carter's like, I'm not going to let anyone decide when I die. And he's all like being a big baby super about it.
Toxic masculinity about it.
Claire suggests, she's like, you need to go to my dad's lake house. You need to hide out from the feds because they think you're just like doing this.
Yeah,
like killing
somehow.
Off everyone who survived somehow. Mm-hmm. And the car there is, like some back and forth argument until Alex confesses that he knows who will die next. Carter wants to know and Alex refuses, saying, you know, it doesn't matter who's next because they're all on the same list. And Carter starts speeding his car because he's like, what's the point in waiting? And I need to have like control over this situation, over like my own destiny.
Yeah.
While everyone else like is like, stop driving like this. Carter yells at him that he needs to control himself. Claire is like, control yourself, you know, and then he continues to drive erratically. Alex has a vision of a train suddenly. Finally, Carter stops the car on the train tracks and they all scrambled all out of the car except for Carter. And he sits there and he contemplates and then he's like, okay, it's not my time to die. And he tries to start the car, but then the car won't start, of course. Alex and Claire yell at him to get out of the car and Alex manages to pull him out at the last second. Everyone's thrown to the side of the train and Billy yells at him. He's like, I'm staying away from you. You're next. And then he suddenly, his head sliced off by a piece of metal that's next to the train or under the train track.
Yeah, like that gets thrown out.
Yes. And so it seems that since Carter was skipped, Billy was next. And so then Billy was killed.
Yeah. So this idea of like intervening, like since, Alex's vision showed the seatbelt breaking. So he knew that if he went and helped Carter, that he'd be able to get him out of the car. And so he intervened in Carter's death. And that means the death skipped Carter and went to Billy, next.
Yeah. And Billy was actually a really pretty funny character.
Yeah. I love Sean William Scott.
Yeah. He's kind of endearing. So it was too bad. But. So then they all flee the scene because Alex cannot be found in another scene of a death. Right. So sometime later, since Alex is next on the kill list, he's at Claire's cabin and he is preparing all sorts of death-proof items in the cabin. He takes extreme precautions not to kill himself. He eats canned mushy meat, so you want to set off a chain of events. He manages to stop some crap from coming out of the closet that was about to kill him.
The wine corks on the nails sticking out of the walls.
Yeah. He's like, not today. And then he taunts death. He's like, this is all you got? And you're like, really? Okay.
Yep. Is that where you want to go with this
it
one?
It makes me think of, I know you did last summer. Like, what are you waiting for? But then he's like, I've got this whole cabin rigged. So nice try, death.
I home aloned this shit.
Yeah, basically. So at home, Claire is worried about Alex and she approaches the feds because she feels like Alex isn't safe. At the cabin, finally, though, Alex figures out he isn't next in the order, but because it's clear, because he never actually switched seats, like from his dream. He never actually did that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, oh, crap, I got to go warn Claire.
Mm-hmm.
So at Claire's house, a power line is in the on the ground acting all wild. It's like there's like a storm and wind and all this stuff. And Claire needs to go rescue her poor dog who's outside next to the like downed power line and going crazy and afraid. The dog is, freaking out. Alex decides that he has to go help Claire and he's chased by the feds who are kind of trying to approach him at the cabin. And she's in danger. She's down there trying to get her dog and her ground pool, of course, has just burst open and there's water everywhere next to the down power line that's whipping around. She manages to climb back onto like a trellis?
Yeah,
trellis. On the side of the house to get out of the water. Well, because there's a power line on the ground that will electrocute her. So she manages to climb back into the house and suddenly, since all of this stuff is going crazy with the power, all these things are surging in her house, causing explosions of all the lights and stuff. She jumps into the car and everything around her is trying to basically kill her as she reverses out of the garage. And the power line is suddenly on the hood of her car. And there's also a fire under her car also because there's like paint thinner that got knocked over somehow, and then now it's on fire. So Alex shows up. He managed to evade the feds. He has a close call where he's almost drowned by a bunch of like branches and stuff, and he like gets out. He shows up. He's like, I have to help you. I'm next on the list. And Claire's like, no, Alex, you can't. And he's like,
I love you.
You're the best. He's like, no, if this is going to happen, I want to make sure you're okay. Yeah. And I'm fine with this. Like,
I'm going to die either way. I want to do it saving you.
Yeah. So he grabs a power line in order to save her so she can jump out of the car before it explodes. And it bursts into flames. She gets out fine. And Alex is electrocuted. And he's knocked to the side. To the ground. He's not breathing right now, and the feds show up right at that point and give him CPR mm-hmm. as he's laying on the ground, and Claire is like, no, Alex. And the camera pans away. 6 months later, the title card says 6 months later, and we see a bunch of people deboarding a plane, and they're like, bonjour, bonjour, and you're like, oh boy. Alex and Carter and Claire, they arrive in Paris, and they are there to go take a trip, that trip that they missed.
Mm-hmm.
And they all get a drink, and it's a nice, lovely night in Paris. And they all toast to their friends who couldn't be there with them, like Terry and everyone. They're like, oh, you know, let's toast to them. And Carter comments that he's surprised that he is here with them. And he's like, if you told me, like, you know, that I'd be here in Paris with you two, that we're like all friends, I would have said you're crazy. You know, but then the two of them, he says that the three of them are the only ones that actually know what it was like to go through that like traumatic event.
Right.
And they have each other. Alex comments that he still can't figure something out. And then he pulls out the seating chart of that plane.
And they're like, God damn it, Alex.
God damn it, Alex. Cut that shit.
I told you to stop bringing that everywhere.
Yeah. So Carter comments that Alex may be next after all. And Claire is like over talking about it. She's like, we have to get over this. You got to stop it with this obsession.
I just want to live my life.
I know. Alex gets up to leave because he kind of is freaked out because this guy who's like serenading people starts singing John Denver.
In French.
And he's like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Suddenly, Claire sees a vision that is a bus. And she yells at Alex. She's like, watch out. And he nearly gets hit by the bus. And the bus hits something else, and then hits something else, and somehow there's a sign that starts like waving. It's gigantic. It starts swinging, and it almost hits Alex, but Carter knocks him out of the way, and then he's standing over Alex like, who's next? And Carter's like, Alex is looking at him like, oh, it's you, buddy. And then you see the giant sign swinging back, and you hear like a thump or whatever as the screen turns to black. Mm-hmm. And we have to surmise that it was poor Carter that got smushed.
Poor asshole Carter.
Yeah, maybe he's not a much of an asshole. If they all went to Paris later,
he's probably still a dick.
And that's the end.
Yeah,
a Final Destination. I really glossed over the deaths because I couldn't be bothered.
They were too complex.
I was like, I can't do like the ball rolled down to the thing and then
into the cup, which made the spring pop, and then it swung across to the thingy, and
yeah, it was too much. Yeah,
too much.
Yeah. So anyway, did you think this movie was scary?
No, of course not.
Not even when you first saw it.
I don't remember how old I was when I saw this for the first time. It might not have been when it was brand new, but it probably wasn't too long after.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't. I have a hard time imagining this being scary. And I think maybe it was this Rube Goldberg execution of the deaths, because the idea, the premise of like, you escape death, but now it's following you everywhere you go. Like, and so at every turn, it's just waiting, and you just know that your time is going to come at any moment. That is a scary idea.
Like, how do you escape death?
Yeah. Or how do you live? Like, would you even want to live if at any moment, like if the whole universe was conspiring to kill you at any moment because you avoided this tragedy? And so that, when you just describe it like that sounds like it has the potential to be scary. But I think it's a combination of, I mean, the actors they had, they weren't very gifted actors and actresses. We love them, but they're not, they're not Jodie Foster. And so that combined with the Rube Goldberg approach to showing like, oh, and then this swung down and spilled on this that made this spark. And then this rolled into that and knocked that can over and all this stuff. Like, it got to be silly.
I was kind of thinking, you know, Sesame Street, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's sort of what I was doing in my head a little bit when I was watching the stuff. Like, I was like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, as like the little things were bumping into stuff. Yeah. And like whatever, but.
Yeah. So that part, I think, took away a little bit from the scariness for me. I could see how some people might see that as building suspense because you're seeing like, oh, now this. And then, oh, my God, then that just hit this and now it's spilled. And you're like, oh, my gosh, now there's, you know, paint thinner spilled on the floor of the garage. And then that branch lands on the electrical line and the electrical line is going to set fire to the paint thinner. Or we all know that vodka is flammable. So I think if you look at it from a different perspective, you might see it as building suspense, but to me it played more like it was just kind of hokey.
Yeah. I would agree. I think it was fun the first time.
It was fun. I absolutely agree. Like I was on board with including this and doing an episode on this movie because it is fun and it's entertaining.
Yeah.
It's not scary though.
No. I think though, let's see. What would you say? I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but sometimes scary movies, and we might want to do an episode about this, where it's just like the first 15, 20 minutes of a horror movie is the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because we've talked about When a Stranger Calls is like the perfect example of that.
Yes.
And then that was our case with Midsommar as well.
Yes. And I felt like this one too.
Okay. So you thought that like everything leading up to the plane actually exploding was like scary, like that whole buildup.
Yeah, it felt kind of like a Twilight Zone a little bit. Maybe. Where you're like, oh, you know, and then suddenly explodes and everyone's like, oh my God. Yeah. And then it falls flat later, but
maybe because of the over repetition, like it just again and again and again. And what, yes. I wonder what weird series of events is going to lead to this person's death.
Yeah. And I think that for the one movie, it was acceptable. Although, as elder millennials, we're always frightened to ride behind logging trucks because of the second one.
Yeah.
But I would say that I appreciate the first chunk of this movie more than the whole rest of the movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I was kind of talking to Tom a little bit about this theme and because he watched the first Final Destination with me, just kind of in passing, not on purpose, just kind of talking about these contrived situations and these stories, and I feel like the reason that these movies were successful and the reason that they were popular is particularly because of the cast and because they really hit their target audience, and their target audience was like teens and young teens.
Yeah.
You know, because once you get to a certain age, it just becomes ridiculous.
Yeah.
But if you are young enough where, you know, you're maybe more volatile, more triggered by stuff, or just more likely to be like, oh my God, it's going to explode. Like you're going to be more reactionary with stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then a movie like this, you might spend the whole time just in full panic mode because of how it hits. And I think that it may be successful with that, but with a very specific age group. Yeah. And we know that this is, you know, Charlotte loved this, that she showed it to her recently.
Yes. Yeah.
And she's like wild about it. And she's that age bracket. Uh-huh. So even though the movie is quite old now, she's still in the age bracket that it was aimed for.
I know. I was watching it kind of through her eyes. I think we were talking about another movie I watched with her. I Know What You Did Last Summer, where she's like, oh gosh, you know, and she was like that with this one too. And I think one night everyone was busy, Deacon Victor were watching a Dodgers game, something like that. And we're like in my room and I was like, you know, I should show you some, there's this movie, Final Destination, because we're talking about Scream and other scary movies. And I'm like, I can't really speak to the rest of the movie, but I know the first 20 minutes is one of those things where, like, you watch it and you're like, oh, that was really good. And you haven't even started the whole movie, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, but she watched it and she's like, I want to know what happens. So we watched the whole rest. And then she watched several more, and then she couldn't handle it anymore on 4 and 5. She's like, I can't watch this anymore. This is so bad.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah, well, I can do a little bit of a summary of the sequels. Yeah. I wish you guys could see the look on Meredith's face. Yeah, so.
Second one's good.
Yeah. Well, no.
No.
Yeah. None.
The logging truck.
Yes.
It's scary.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, so all, there's 5 of them total. And they were just named 1, 2, 3, then The Final Destination. They did not put the number 4 on the 4th movie. And then the 5th one was Final Destination 5. And that was it. That's all they did. And they all follow the exact same formula of the movie begins with this colossal tragedy that claims, you know, hundreds or thousands of lives. And there's a handful of survivors. And then the rest of the movie is death pursuing those survivors and them trying to escape it, essentially. And I think that it's interesting to look at the selection of catastrophic events that the movies begin with, because they really, to some extent, they're like tapping it or trying to tap into very real phobias and fears that people have. Because a plane crash is really a big deal. Like, that's something that people are, lots of people are truly frightened about. And so that's not like it's a gimme or it's cheap to play on that, but it's smart. To be like, you know, a plane crash is already terrifying to most people. So let's start with that, with this scary movie. Mm-hmm. So the second movie, the big disaster at the beginning, is just this huge pileup on a freeway, on a highway, like just this catastrophic accident involving all of these cars. And like Meredith mentioned, a logging truck and the logs going everywhere and, you know, just deaths right and left. So this huge pileup on a freeway. The third movie, the catastrophe is a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You know, a train derailing off of a roller coaster, which, again, like people ride roller coasters because it's scary. But it's scary in a good way because you believe you're safe.
Yeah.
Sure. So, and then the fourth movie, the catastrophe, this isn't, I think, a very common fear, is a NASCAR crash. And so, like, you have the cars and the tires and everything flying into the crowd, but also there's the stadium is not structurally sound, so there's like pillars collapsing and roofs collapsing and everything. So there's a huge disaster at a NASCAR race. Mm-hmm. Is the disaster at the beginning of the 4th movie, and then at the beginning of the 5th movie, the disaster is a bridge collapse. Which is another, you know, thing, like a lot of people, my best friend Hillary does not like going across bridges. Like, it's, you know, that's not an unusual thing for people to be uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
And so that strategy, I think, is pretty smart for setting up the movie, like you say, especially if you find that first 15-20 minutes is the scariest part of the movies. Maybe it's because it's playing on these like really like actual fears that people legitimately have. Mm-hmm. Whereas like all of the ridiculous ways that they die throughout the rest of the movie are not legitimate fears that people have.
Right.
Yeah. So that was one thing that I thought was interesting to mention among the sequels. The other, I think, was obviously the presence of Tony Todd, because he's the only thread in the series aside from Ali Larter's character, Clear. Mm-hmm. She comes back in the second one, but that's the only time that they repeat characters amongst any of the sequels,
except for
Tony Todd's character as the coroner / funeral home director. They're kind of vague about what his job actually is. He's just always with the bodies. But he's in the first and second one. His character doesn't appear in the third one, but he does the voice of this big devil machine at the carnival where the roller coaster accident takes place, when it's like, come ride the scariest, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it's this big Satan thing. And it's Tony Todd's voice.
Oh, I love him.
So that was fun. He was not in the fourth one, but he came back in the fifth one to play the same character. And so he was always a nice little Easter egg. I think especially like those of us that knew him from Candyman, which came out, that was 96, right?
92.
Oh, that's right. Like, even earlier.
Really?
Were like, Candyman was probably, I mean, that and It were the two first movies to ever really scare me. Like, really, really, really scare me. And so Candyman is like larger than life in my brain as a young person. Mm-hmm. So you get real excited anytime you see him in anything.
I saw it on UPN. it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, Candyman.
Ooh.
I was like in fourth grade. Gotta watch this. And it was, of course, made for TV, so.
Yeah, they cut out all the good parts.
They cut all the juicy bits.
That's funny. So did Candyman. Mm-hmm. But then, so another thing that they kind of were nonchalant about was their approach in all of the movies to how the survivors might potentially actually survive, you know, long term, right? In the first one, it was really just focusing on the order and trying to stay safe. And they became aware of this. Oh, it'll skip over. Like if somebody intervenes, it'll skip over a person and go to the next person. Mm-hmm. But then they realize it just cycles back around to the beginning once it gets to the end of the group. So that's not a permanent rescue.
Like death is going to get you regardless.
Yeah, they might skip you on this rotation, but it's going to come back around.
Right.
In the second one, they tried to introduce this kind of bizarre concept of new life being the solution, and they realized that one of the women that was saved through her intervention in the initial disaster was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, well, if she, that baby never existed in the original timeline or death's original plan, because she was supposed to die before she had the baby. But if she survives and then she has the baby, then basically their theory was it was just going to throw the whole thing out of whack and everyone would be okay. So they spend most of the second movie trying to ensure that this woman is able to successfully have her baby.
And does it make sense? Someone's like, I got an idea.
And it just, I don't know. And that one, it's always Tony Todd's like, suggestion. Like he's just fucking with people. They didn't do anything real special or particular in the third one. But one thing that I was very excited to see in the third one was Mary Elizabeth Winstead was the main character.
I do like her.
I love her. And it's funny because I believe she's a very good actress. Mm-hmm. And so in the scenes, like when she's performing monologues or, you know, delivering those lines or whatever as the main character of the third movie, you see like what it's like when you have like a more talented performer in one of those roles. You're like, oh yeah, I think you're going places, young lady.
Yeah.
So that was exciting. And then I can't remember if they did something different in the fourth one, but the fifth one, Tony Todd again like plants this little seed in their head that basically like they by their survival everything's out of balance, and then so the solution is for them to kill someone.
Oh.
And so if they kill someone, then the numbers have been corrected. It's like, you know, it's just accounting. It's death's accounting.
Yeah.
So if you murder someone, then you get to take their life and you'll have all the time that they were going to have. And so it that at least made it a little bit, it brought some new interest into it, because then you had the element of the one survivor who was always kind of an asshole, and then the one girl in the group who actually was not supposed to die initially. Like in his vision, he actually saves her from the bridge collapse. Mm-hmm. And so she's not on the list that death is coming for. Mm-hmm. And so, but then this one dickhead was like, but why, I mean, why should you get to live when all the rest of us have to die? And my rationale is that I'm going to kill somebody so that I get to live. So I'm going to kill you. And so then now you have them trying to kill each other. Mm-hmm. It's not just death coming after them, you know, from the outside. So that was at least something like a little bit new and interesting to add.
And in a little thing to, you know, the survivors have to, like, in fighting.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. To bring a little bit something new and fresh to it, so to speak. But then the hilarious part is when you get all the way to the end of Final Destination 5, and it's that one girl who wasn't supposed to die and her boyfriend that, you know, was the one that had the vision, the main character. They, you know, have survived. They all made it through. They figured everything out. And they're on a plane to Paris to celebrate. It's the plane from the first movie.
Oh, that's fine.
So Final Destination 5 is actually a prequel.
Oh, okay.
Because they die on Flight 180 that explodes in the first movie.
Oh, okay.
And so
I never
bothered
watching the fifth one because I was like, I can't do this anymore.
No, and I would not recommend any of these movies to anyone. but, you know, it's just you want to give them a little bit of credit for the, they do try to continue to be creative in how people die. Mm-hmm. Of course, as the death count increases, they have to get more and more creative. Then sometimes it's also more and more ridiculous.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, it's pretty gory and graphic. I almost feel like the NASCAR one might have been available in 3D from where some of the way some of the camera angles seemed.
Yeah. I think that I did see that. It was like, no, in 3D. I'm like, who's
Seriously? Like, what are you talking about?
This is what we're doing now?
Yep, evidently. Yeah, so, like I said, I wouldn't recommend any of these movies to anyone. I mean, the first one, just because it's, for us, it's a classic. For our age group. And then, or if you're someone like Charlotte's age, where I feel like you're the target audience for it to land.
Yeah, and it's not a very terrifying movie.
No.
So it's like, it's kind of fun to watch and not anything that would actually scar you for life.
Right.
You know, where you think that someone's going to come and murder you, whatever.
Yeah.
Death is going to murder us all in the end. So
that is the plan. And death is Tony Todd. So thank God for that.
I love him.
I love him too. I love him in The Rock.
He's one of the mercenaries
in The Rock.
Oh, I never saw that.
Oh, Meredith.
Oh, sorry.
How long have you lived in the Bay Area?
A while.
Unacceptable.
I just never watched it.
Well, yeah. So that's the Final Destination franchise,
Final
folks.
Destination. A lovely recap by Katie, because I couldn't be bothered to watch any more than the second.
And I will admit, I was not fully attentive in watching all of these sequels. I'm currently highly obsessed with a new game that I app that I got on my phone the last time I was on a car trip. So I was playing that game on my phone for the majority of these sequels, but I, you know.
You didn't miss much.
Nope, I sure
didn't miss much.
I sure didn't.
Okay, well, good chat. So as far as like showing this to your kids, oh, we didn't even ask if I was scared. I think we all know the answer. Movies don't scare me. So should we even bother anymore?
Yeah, I apologize.
It's part of our tagline.
I am remiss. Meredith, did you think this was scary?
No. Okay, moving on. But I think that if you're, you know, slowly showing your kids scary movies, this would be an easy one. Easy.
Yeah, and the first one, I wouldn't do the rest of them because a lot of the deaths do get pretty, they go for the gore and the splatter.
Well, Billy's death is kind of gross.
Yeah, and the teacher with the knife in her chest, but it's not the same thing. Like in one of the fifth one, a girl is doing a dismount off of the uneven bars in gymnastics, and she lands broken and half backwards.
Oh, what's
you
weird.
Know, like there's okay. another one where a guy is like lifting weights in the gym and two weights slam down and clap together, smashing his head between them.
Oh,
like. It's not so much like the presence of the blood, because like when Terry gets hit by the bus in the first one, that's a big splat.
Yeah.
You yes. know, but as the movies go on, they get way weirder and ickier and kind of they might be more upsetting to a younger kid.
Right. Right. So we condone watching the first one.
Yeah. For lots of reasons.
For lots
and not
of
the
reasons.
Rest.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's that.
Mm-hmm.
But our next movie that we're going to chat about is Urban Legend. Another ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm. From the late 90s.
The most important person is Jared Leto, obviously.
Obviously, but it does also star Alicia Witt, who was in Long Legs.
Was she?
Yeah, she was the mom.
Was she? Oh!
Yeah.
I didn't even realize
that. No, so I had this whole thing. So I saw her name in the opening credits and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know she was in this. And then I spent the entire movie trying to figure out what I recognized the mom from. And after the movie, I looked it up and I was like, oh, that was Alicia Witt. Like I knew she was in it going into it.
I didn't recognize her without her like trademark red hair.
Exactly. Yeah. And she is a lot older than the last thing I've seen her in. Cause I know she's worked pretty consistently, but I still just remember her from when she was like in her 20s, like Urban Legends era.
Yes.
And she is, you know, obviously a lot older now, as we all are.
Yes, that tends to happen.
Yeah, but yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. Well, there's a connection. So that's our next one. And, this is like a random aside, but did you see that they're doing a prequel to Rosemary's Baby?
What? Yes. How?
It's the woman who lived with them before Rosemary.
Oh.
Terry? I think what's her name?
Was her name Terry again?
Terry.
The one that falls out the window at the beginning of Rosemary's Baby?
Yes.
That Rosemary meets down in the basement?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, it's actually some pretty big names.
Really? Oh, that's exciting. Rosemary's Baby, those of you that haven't been paying attention, is one of Meredith's like all-time favorite horror movies.
Yes. And it has the actress from, I think she's, yeah, she's in Ozark. She plays Ruth Langmore.
Okay.
She's got the, you'd recognize her for sure.
Oh, a little bit. Yeah. I didn't watch Ozark, but I do recognize her face.
She's fantastic. She's won like Emmys and had nominations and acclaim and all sorts of stuff for that. And then, it's produced by John Krasinski.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and Jim Sturgis. I don't really know. He's from a few British movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then who is, I was most interested in who's playing.
Terry?
No. Oh. Well.
The old lady.
Yes. Who was played by Ruth Gordon.
Yeah.
Who got an Oscar for that role.
Yeah.
But it's Diane West.
Love her.
We love her from Lost Boys and so much stuff.
The Birdcage.
Yeah, she's playing
Law and Order.
You wouldn't know that. But she's playing the neighbor.
That's fantastic. Neighbor.
So I'm excited. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be good.
And when does it come out?
It's supposed to come out. It says September, like right before October on Paramount Plus.
Straight to streaming,
but.
Might have to do a watch party.
It has people who are pretty well-known.
Yeah. So. Well, and that's the thing. Like, straight to streaming now doesn't mean anything. Like,
yeah.
Netflix is making, you know, an Apple TV, making incredible projects that mm-hmm. absolutely would warrant a theatrical release. And it's just, that's not
people are not what they're doing really anymore. Going to the theater. Theater
just you
anymore.
And me.
Just the two. There's, like, four of us.
Yep.
In the theater. Probably maybe five. I think there's two people and one guy and then us.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, again, I will repeat, it was 9:45 in the morning on a Wednesday. So, just us teachers.
Yeah, just us. So I'm excited because I love that movie so much. But
that is very cool.
I think they'll probably do it right, hopefully.
So. Hopefully, yeah. John Krasinski, it seems to be very thoughtful and seems to do really good work. We actually just, it's not horror at all, but Tom and I just watched the entire Jack Ryan series that he did. And it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And now it was actually weird because, you know, we've obviously watched like every other American 1,000 hours of The Office over the years. And then but then we were binging Jack Ryan for like, I don't know, 2 weeks or something. And then the first time we put The Office back on just in the background after that, it was so weird to see him as Jim again and not as Jack Ryan that I was like, whoa, I can't handle this.
This is crazy.
Yeah. But we know how careful and intentional he was in making The Quiet Place. Like he really mm-hmm. took that very seriously.
Yeah.
And so I bet you that he will have that same approach to this, like really wanting to do justice to the original and the source material and make a quality piece.
Right. Yeah. So I think that will be pretty good.
Yeah.
But I actually did enjoy Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger with Harrison Ford, who played that Jack Ryan character.
Yeah.
So I would be open to watching the show.
Well, yeah, because then after we watched the series, then we were like, oh, well, now we gotta watch all the movies because I had only seen Patriot Games and Tom hadn't seen any of them. And the first one was Hunt for Red October, where Alec Baldwin played Jack Ryan. But then he couldn't reprise the role because he was on Broadway and the timing didn't work out. Like you were talking about how just the timing, like how much movies is just chance of like who's available and who they cast in a role, because then they went to Harrison Ford and he's what I think most people think of as Jack Ryan, even though he mm-hmm. only made two movies.
Yes.
And then there were two more after that because Ben Affleck made one as Jack Ryan. He was terrible. It was terrible.
I don't even recognize that as a thing that happened.
Yeah. His was the Sum of All Fears. Affleck did. And Morgan Freeman was in it. And Kieran Hines, like it was a great cast. But Ben Affleck sucked as Jack Ryan. Sucked.
Oh, that's too bad.
And then they made another one with Chris Pine as Jack Ryan. And he actually did a really, really good job.
I like Chris Pine.
But they didn't come back to him for whatever reason for another one after that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so
this
we
has
just,
nothing to do with horror.
No,
but,
it's no longer a horror podcast. Now it's a Tom Clancy podcast.
Oh, Tom Clancy. Gotta love it.
That guy.
All right. Well, fun conversation. Next time we meet, we'll be talking about
urban legends.
And I'm very excited because I may have read tons of books about urban legends.
Yes.
And I am.
That'll be a big contribution from Meredith next time.
Yeah.